Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children, all ages, to my F4L across the world. Welcome to the F4L headquarters. And this is lined up to be one of the most epic episodes we've had thus far. For those of you guys who don't know who I am the icon, the leader of the F4L. I am Sean Jazz Stevens. And for the last, well, you know, I lost track of how long it's been since I've been the leader of that. However, regardless, here I am. And here you are. I am credited as being the founder of the F4L. I am credited for leading the F4L. I take a lot of pride in that, and a lot of people might not think that that's such a big deal. To me, that's huge. You know, to go back to the beginning will be epic, because I'm going to tell you that story unfiltered tonight. But first, what I want to do at the top of the hour, at the top of the show. So tomorrow will mark 20 years since 9/11, I believe. 20 years, man. It's a very somber occasion on U.S. Time periods. Those people who are not from the United States who listen to the show, to our worldwide F4L audience, and for those people who have ever lived, whoever those people who've been under a rock somewhere. 20 years ago, tomorrow, well, in about an hour or so, during the course of this show, we're going to be entering 9/11. And a lot of people have heard what 9/11 is. People have learned about it in school since then. It's been a lot of people will tell you their various different takes on it. Many people who were around back then will tell you various stories, what it meant for them, where they were, what they were doing. You know, I guess I've been blessed with a very sharp memory for the most part. And throughout my course of my life, I'm 41 now, and throughout my lifetime, I've already have laid witness to many, many various different things. Some good, some not so good. Some of them I was very much right up there in the moment. And some of them I watched from afar. So, as a kid in the 80s, I was watching with my class and when the, Challenger exploded, national television. It was a sad moment, but to us, we were too young to really remember a lot of what happened and to take it into perspective as much as the older people did. Fast forward to, my freshman year of high school. That's when, O.J. Simpson's verdict came down. Some people might not think that's such a big thing or such a global scale thing, but on retrospect, what that did is shake the foundation of the justice system and may also opened up a can of worms, so to speak, for people who, can talk about those types of things. But then we fast forward to tomorrow's anniversary, which is 9/11. So now, I am not by any means a political individual. I usually stay out of a lot of politics, so I don't get involved with politics, and I don't talk about conspiracy theories because those aren't important. In all honesty, conspiracy theories, in my opinion, especially when it comes to things like 9/11, I think it really disrespects a lot of the people who lost their lives that day and that followed. I think it is a slap in the face to the people who did everything they could to help or prevent those things from happening that day. And for me, it's a eye opener, and I think it's something we can all learn about the importance of seizing the moment and taking our time in life and experiencing each day and living to our fullest potential. People often talk about, you know, what happened that morning in the graphic detail, the grimace in that. But I think what's important to honor and to pay tribute to are the people whose lives were affected for lifetimes. People who were in the area, who witnessed type of things, those are memories that will last with them for decades. They can't really close their eyes, especially on a day when they look at a calendar, they're reminded of that day. Being someone who lives with post-traumatic stress disorder myself, that comes from my life, my childhood. I came from a very tragic background, a very not-so-nice home life, until I formed the F4L that saved my life and gave me foundation and gave me purpose. So, you know, there's a couple things that I want to reflect on. First, I want to take you back to that day for me. A lot of people always say, you know, I remember where I was and what I was doing. And I could do that too. I could tell you that I was with a supposed friend getting her nails done when the news came on the radio, and then we started up the nail salon. But I don't think that's what's important. I don't think it's important what we were doing when that happened. I think what's important is to reflect upon the people's lives that were lost, the messages of hope, the message of love, the message of strength that came from that. You see, a lot of people these days who live in the United States, I live in the United States. Again, I don't take political stances. I don't tell people how to vote or whatever else, as long as you do vote, because it gives you a voice at least. But what I can tell you this, I am proud of being an American. That sounds cliche. That sounds, you know, very, you know, whatever. And I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are probably maybe rolling their eyes right now. But what was shown on that day in the weeks that followed was the human and how what I remember isn't so much about the planes and the destruction. It's the rebuilding, the foundations, and the relationships that were spawned from that day. It's about what happened when, as a country, but as a world, came together. And when we got the support from the world, when they saw this isn't okay. And for me, that is the most endearing thing about the whole 9/11 thing. I didn't watch it like everyone else did on TV. Kind of like last year with the whole, you know, pandemic that we all went through as a world. This is kind of the same thing. I think it sensationalizes the event and not so much about reflecting upon the people and taking the good with the bad. It was a horrendous day for a lot of people. Kids lost their parents. Parents lost their kids. You know, as a parent, I can just imagine what it was like to get the phone call or not get the phone call about what would happen with my kids if they were on the plane. I couldn't imagine what it was like to be on the plane. I have to call my wife or my kids to tell them goodbye for the last time. That's kind of what people should take apart, take away from what that day meant to people. To me, that's what is important. It's how as a country, as a nation, as a world, we came together, if not for a few hours, for a few years. And as a nation, as a country, as a world, we said, this isn't okay. brothers were helping brothers and sisters here in America, and there was a lot of pride everywhere. I think what's sad is that as a nation today, it seems that that message is kind of fleeting, except for days like tomorrow. Days like tomorrow, people will sometimes remember what it was like. And people say, well, wasn't it nice when everyone was there together? And the reality is, there's no reason why that can't be there today. So I don't want to, you know, bring a lot of people down in the mood, but I do want to, I think it's important to reflect upon days like tomorrow, 9/11. What does it mean for different people? It means it's going to mean different things. And again, everyone can tell you, well, I was here and I was there. But here's the thing. You weren't there. And, you know, thinking about being a person who watched on TV who didn't have a person immediately involved in that, that's a horrendous thing to be part of that. It's different from someone watching from afar and watching the tragedies, but it's what you learn from it. It's kind of like when you make a mistake in life or doing something, you learn from it and you move on. When 9/11 happened, I was already F4L, and F4L was already a thing. So for me, what it reminded me is how the F4L lifestyle is also, it gives me hope to talk about what the F4L is. What does it mean to be F4L? A lot of people have heard about it on this show. The title of this podcast is the F4L headquarters. What does that mean? A lot of people have asked me. Trust me, I get the emails. Don't think I don't. And I do. And today I'm going to be answering some of them. Some of them a little bit lighter than this subject, but this subject has come up and people have asked me to talk about it and address this. And, you know, and here I am, but I do things my way. I do things the way I think it should be done. I don't necessarily have to go with the formation of telling someone, you know, what, how they should feel. And that's not my business to do that. But here's what I can tell you. And this is a true story. After 9/11 for me, I was appreciative, as I always am, of my F4L. I reached out to my fellow brothers and sisters in the F4L, made sure they were okay. Luckily, they were. Everyone around me was shooken and was really affected. And I'm not saying it wasn't a horrendous day. It was. But for me, I'm F4L, and I continue doing things the F4L way. I reached out to people. I offered my condolences. I talked to people at length. People at that time, that was when, you know, social media was really starting to take off. The F4L was already a thing, as I said. So I was already talking about the F4L. I was always living the F4L way. For those people who don't know, we're going to go in depth with the F4L today. And the origin and history. But to be F4L, to live the F4L way, what that means is every day from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed at night, I live the F4L way with love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. That is what it means to be F4L. That's the creed. That's what we fight for. That's what we live for. And why do we live this way? This is kind of what we believe a family should be. This is what a family dynamic should be. And those people who call themselves F4L live that way with love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. When you have those dynamics, there is less room for complications, for disagreements, for disrespect, for war, for violence. A lot of people will misunderstand what it is to be F4L, that maybe the F4L is a weak thing, and that's not the case either. We see, not only do we speak about those messages, we support those things, and we fight for those things because those are what's important. What it means to be F4L is when you see something that you don't agree with and no one else does something, then that's your responsibility to be the F4L that you were meant to be, to show your love, your caring, your compassion, your understanding, your respect for each other's differences. For me, being seen as the leader of the F4L, it's kind of my kind of job, if you would, to keep everyone in check in the F4L, to make sure everyone is on board, to make sure everyone is okay. So when, you know, something happens in a country where I know there's F4L, and to be honest, the F4L is practiced worldwide. I can tell you, you know, as of maybe a week ago, I did a little map of the various people who I know live the F4L way on a regular basis. We have F4L people on F4L members, families, their brothers and sisters who live across the world, pretty much in every continent, in every region. Some people don't speak the same languages, but we all have the same motto. We have the same passion for life, for people, for things, for success, for, you know, living in the best way you can. By all means, are we weak? Are we not afraid to fight for what we believe in? Because that's part of what it is too. But you have to learn what you're fighting about, and to make it worth it. When I am going to get myself involved in situations, take me back to my high school days when the F4L was already a thing. I was dubbed the bully buster. We're going to go into bullying in a little bit because someone asked me what my stance is on bullying, and you know whatnot. And I'm going to go into that a little later. This is going to be a full episode, and it's probably going to be me talking and educating and reflecting. What I really want people to do is understand that to be F4L, it's a whole different lifestyle that a lot of people can't really commit to fully. But when you do, it does open up your heart, and it also makes you look at things differently. And you know, various other things just aren't existence. There's no conflict in the F4L. The fact that I can pick up the phone and call someone who I call an F4L and say, hey, listen, I got an issue. And I talk to that friend, that brother, that sister, whatever, in the F4L. That is me helping each other. Or at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm ready to go to sleep at night, but a friend of mine calls me and says, hey, Jazz, I got this issue. Can I talk to you about this? Part of being F4L is I answer that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning, regardless what I'm doing in life. My friend, my brother asked me for help, and I'm there to help him. I'm going to go into that a little later. We're going into the F4L, what that means, and you know, different things. But I do want to do one thing right now. I should have done this to start. What I want to do is about a minute of a silence for the many people who were affected at 9/11. And after the conclusion of that moment, we'll continue, and we're going to change gears and do things the way we should, and life goes on. We're going to do that at the conclusion of this little segment about 9/11. It's not a little segment by any means. It's something that I think is important to be talked about. My son, who wasn't alive during 9/11, he was born the year after. My daughter was born the year of 9/11. Just a baby, really. Didn't know anything. My son missed it completely. And actually, last week, my son asked me about it and actually showed him everything that there was out there. Because I think that the best way to answer things and the best way to answer some things what are there is with the facts and show him. Some people might say, well, that's sensationalizing. No, it's educating. My son asked me a question. He asked me about a scenario. And unless you're actually there to see what was there then, or to feel it almost, I think it's important for them to understand, kids who weren't there, what it was like during that time. So before we have the moment of silence, I'm just going to continue this for about a minute or two. I want to tell you my perspective, what I did regarding this. When 9/11 happened, I was working as a volunteer at a day program for adults with mental illness. I really enjoyed helping people. I still do. My job at the time was to set up their social activities. So I want to take you back to the year it was, 2001. So I was 21 years old. I was living in my own apartment. My wife and I weren't together yet. We had kids together, we obviously, but we were, you know, separated or whatever. Weren't ready to commit to the whole family thing as of yet, but I was still, you know, prospective or whatever. However, when that whole thing took place, 9/11, I was still working at the state program as a volunteer for adults with mental health. I was helping them set up their activities. So, like, my job was to, you know, call places, get them tickets to things. They didn't have a lot of money, a lot of these people, so I'd call, like, you know, in my area, I was from Boston, so I would call the Red Sox and the, you know, the TD Garden and things like that, and they would go on like tickets to our program, so our members, the people who came, the clients, could go to these events for free or very limited or very little money. I took a lot of pride in helping that and seeing the joy that people had doing those things. And I feel strongly that people should be enjoying life. I don't think people should be limited because they don't have a lot of money to do it. So I was really helpful with that. But because at that point I was already doing public speaking around various different things, I was already talking about bullying or, you know, lack thereof, I should say. And I was already talking about various other things. And again, I was, you know, helping these people and on top of my regular job and wrestling, mind you. I remember down 2001, I was still professional. I was still involved in pro wrestling. And I was doing pretty well at that time, too. I was still in great shape. For me, what I did was for 9/11, the whole thing. Again, I lived the F4L way, continued to do that. I supported the people who were affected by it. I stayed away from the negativity. I really embraced the human spirit that the F4L live every day. That's not a once-in-a-lifetime thing for people who are F4L. That's how we are always, or we should be. But because the program that I was working for, the day program, they were flying people to with the conference where they were going to take people from various clubhouses. Now, this program was... They call it a clubhouse, and these are worldwide. And basically what these clubhouses do is they take they're, you know, made up of adults, various ages or whatever. And what we the program was meant to do is get them involved in the community, to engage them in the community, maybe go back and help them maybe go back to, for the people who didn't have the resources or whatever, maybe we help them go back to school or get a job. People were intimidated with that, people who are living in programs who need to, you know, learn some adult-type skills. And that's kind of what this program was for. So from my aspect, the social program, I was helping them interact in the in social setting in public. No one should feel excluded from having fun because they have a mental illness. That was kind of my perspective, but the program had many different functions. And every so often, they would fly people to what they called the clubhouse, International Clubhouse Conference, where people from all over the world would come who worked in these types of facilities, these day programs, and talk about the various things they were doing in their clubhouses, put their heads together and, you know, share information and kind of network in one setting. This one was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is in the United States, southern part of the United States. I'm from the Northeast, and I remember during the summer of 2001, they had a lot of people who they had asked to come to be part of that from our clubhouse, because what they do is they picked, you know, the company I worked for. I was volunteering, remember. They picked different delegates from the various different programs to go. It wasn't everyone. But me, they wanted me to talk about what it was like to, you know, work the social program and to what it was like to work, you know, as a young guy doing a lot of the things I was. So they asked me to go to Chattanooga to talk to the people in Chattanooga in front of all these people about what it was to be, you know, whatever. And, of course, when they asked me back in the beginning of the summer of 2001, I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then, you know, fast forward to September 11th, 2001. You know, we all know what happened. Planes hijacked and were used as a terrorism objects. Three planes. Two of them you know, were down in New York. One of them went down in a field, and I think it was four actually altogether. Now that I think about it, because it was another one that flew into the Pentagon. But needless to say, regardless, right after 9/11, immediately almost after, the mode in the world changed. Travel changed. To this day, things are affected in travel because of what happened on this day. A lot of people will, you know, be annoyed at TSA or the airport security or anything like that, but you have to understand what they went through that day. And all of the lives were affected on that day because certain things may or may not have happened. So next time you go through TSA and you go flying on an airplane or whatever, instead of being annoyed about having to take off your shoes or whatever, maybe take a minute to reflect upon the fact that you can actually fly on a plane and someone lost their lives that day who can never fly again. And they were flying either to work or to home or whatever else. They'll never come home. So think about that the next time you complain about flying on a plane and going through TSA security or whatever the case may be. Just reflect upon that and think about those people who were affected because maybe that wasn't done properly. Anywho, so when 9/11 happened, of course, they came back to everyone who was supposed to go on this, you know, conference to Chattanooga. And they asked everyone, and my program particularly, they asked six of us to go originally. And again, it's a big program, but only six people, you know, were able to go, and they wanted me to speak. Basically, it was made up of both members and staff and the volunteers like myself who were doing a little bit more, right? I also helped them out with, like, their newsletter and things like that. I'd write out movie articles for them, because, I mean, I've always liked writing anyway, so there was that. But anywho, so they came to me, and they said, Sean, do you still want to go? I said, yeah, I'm going to go. And my family, my blood family, I remember my mother particularly. About a year or two prior to this, my mother, who was absent from my life for a long while, 11 years to be exact, about a year or two prior to this, she had just come back into my life. And when 9/11 happened, of course, everyone had to reach out to everyone. And my mother made me call her. I remember my mother was very unhappy about my decision to go to Chattanooga. And other people looked at me like they had, like I had three heads when I said, yeah, I'm going to go to Chattanooga to represent the clubhouse. And people asked me, well, why did I do that? Why, with everything going on? Because during that time, everyone was afraid to fly because of what happened already a month prior. The conference was scheduled for October 2001. It was a week conference. It was all expenses paid. It was in a hotel, and you had to go to these, you know, seminars, and then at night you got to explore the city of Chattanooga and do whatever else. And again, these are people from all over the world who are, you know, chosen to represent their clubhouse, who are chosen to be a voice. And I remember when it came to me, my thinking is the same as it always is. It's going to be a cold day in hell before someone's going to keep me from doing what I believe is right. So a month after 9/11, despite what my family wanted me to do, I got on a plane and flew to Chattanooga, Tennessee to represent not only my company, not only the mental health community, not only the International Clubhouse Conference, but also represent the country as a whole in the upper world, of course, but the company as a whole, because I was not going to be scared out of doing what I believed was right, especially when I heard of, you know, the various tactics we used to commandeer those types of planes. And I was ready to fight, and I would have gone down fighting, and I still will go down fighting if those things ever came down, because that's what I'm going to do. Of course, as you can hear by my voice, and you can hear that I'm still here, obviously the trip went very well. One of the biggest highlights is I had just written my latest song that I had written called The Misunderstood Boy. And it was a song that I wrote while the whole thing was going, and I chose I sang it in front of 500 people in a room, in an audience. So it was a huge conference hall, like you would see at like a convention hall or whatever. And it was full of 500 people, delegates from all over the world, Australia, England, the UK, Canada, Mexico, all over Europe. You know, anywhere that the Clubhouse conference, everywhere pretty much, all over the world represented this one thing. And I sang this song that I wrote called The Misunderstood Boy, which, by the way, I would turn into one of my first feature films where I would adapt to screenplay. That would make one of my films. And this song I sang a cappella in front of all these people. And it might have been the first time in a long time I got a standing ovation for a song I had written since probably second grade at a talent show for singing. I mean, I've obviously done things in wrestling or whatever. But this is something different. But this was my greatest moment, having 500 people from across the world standing in applause for a song that I wrote that I sang a cappella about, you know, what it's like to grow up, you know, without no one understanding what this young man needs and no one understanding who he is, but he's a really good person. It was a powerful song. It was a great movie, and I stand by it to this day. And it will stand down as being one of my defining moments. And if I had not gone to Chattanooga to do that, that experience wouldn't have happened. And I think to myself of how lucky I was that I was able to do that, but I would have done it in a heartbeat. And it was a month after 9/11 I got on that plane to fly to Chattanooga to represent. Not, like I said, I already went over that. So that's kind of what 9/11 means to me, is courage, strength, humility, and the power of the F4L. So that being said, I'm going to take a moment of silence, and then we're going to go on with the show according, and we're going to continue with this journey to tonight that the rest of it should be a little bit lighthearted, but there's going to be some really educational stuff here that's going to be a powerful show tonight. So sit back, relax, and get ready. So let's take a moment to reflect upon the people of 9/11. Thank you. All right, folks, let's switch gears and start talking about some things that are not related to 9/11. We've done that part. Time to move on. All right. So, first of all, I got a lot of fan questions, which I want to address momentarily. I get emails on a regular basis. And, you know, I don't get a lot of the chances. I mean, I respond to every email I get when I get them. But some of them I feel are more eligible or should be, you know, really shared over here on the airwaves, so that not everyone kind of gets to hear the answer. A lot of people might have the same question that we just don't know who to answer or how to. So I've selected some emails. I'm not going to read off the names because, you know, the people know who they are, but I'm going to answer some questions at random that people have been asking me. So the first question I have gotten is someone asking me, my thoughts on, bullying, you know, how I got involved with the anti-bullying movement and, you know, is bullying really a big deal and whatever. So I'm just going to answer this real quick because this is a fast answer. I don't condone bullying. I think bullying is the worst thing someone can do to someone else. I think for me, I've seen, you know, people try to do the bullying thing to others. The mistake they make is they do it in front of me when I was younger. And what I find for myself, see, going back to like the school days, that's kind of how I knew I was going to be geared differently towards things than other people. I was in a classroom in school. I mean, I don't know how many people probably have been in this scenario where you see someone getting tormented by other people for no apparent reason. This was a case where this kid was actually smaller than these two dudes who are supposedly, you know, big on the flag football team, please. At this time, I was doing other sports, and I was doing combat sports and stuff like that. I had talked before about I had competed in freestyle tournaments when I was younger. Freestyle combat tournaments would turn into what MMA is today. So, you know, back then it was combat, you know, various multiple styles, freestyle. You have multiple different, you know, combining arts and stuff and tournaments and stuff. But anyway, I remember being in classes and I'd see kids getting tormented. Either they were smaller or they were ganged up on. And looking at everyone else who knows it's wrong, the teacher's not in the room, obviously, because that's one of the first things parents, I think I touched on the last show I had talked about, you know, the people out there, the ignorant people who are like, well, where are the teachers when that's going on? And the reality is anyone who's ever been bullied can tell you the teacher was either in the hallway or talking to another, you know, teacher outside or not paying attention. Because that happens more times than you would hope as a parent. Of course, you know, you want your kids to be safe at school, but what you should understand is the teachers have several hundred other, you know, things they got to do on top of taking care of the kids and, you know, education. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a classroom back in the school days, and I would see kids getting tormented. Everyone in the class knows it's wrong. They have their heads down. They have their nose in the book, or they, you know, just pretend it's not happening. Like they can't hear it, but clearly they can because I'm watching it. You as a person have your deciding factor at this particular time. This is kind of that fight or flight thing. And this is that kind of, I mean, this is actually kind of formate how one would be. Me, I wasn't about to sit there and watch someone getting picked on. I don't care how many people there were. I know what's right, and I would always get myself involved in the situation. Usually, 9 out of 10 times, the kids would back down real quick when they realized this kid's going to get backed up by someone who's not going to be a pushover. A lot of the times when it comes to bullies is a lot of it comes to do with the fact that they're big on images as bullies. Bullies feed off weakness of other people. They feed on the power they get by making someone else feel inferior to them. So one of the first things I say to people who want to, you know, compete, you know, who want to try to avoid bullying or try to fight bullying is, first of all, you got to stand your ground and know when to do that, which is anytime someone makes you feel poorly about yourself. If someone has the audacity to call you out as a person, to humiliate you, to make you look your weak, that's your opportunity to stand up for yourself. That's the first thing I'm going to say. But there are some people who are smaller than others. So there are some people who don't have that skill. There are some kids who are very passive, and I get that. But then you as a class, and there's other people in the class, if there's a class of 10 people, 20 people, one of you have to have the guts or the mind with all to know that this isn't right, and one of you have to have a voice. Now, this, in several scenarios, it's usually one person being a jackass to some small person. There are some cases where there's been more than one person giving someone a hard time. Fun fact about me, and this is actually not so much a pro that is a con, really. I don't have a fear of people. I don't look at numbers. I don't think of my safety when it comes to doing what I think is right. And that's a sad part or a scary part to some. I do what I think is right. So if there's five people ganging up on one small kid, then I'm going to be getting myself involved and I'm going to take on those five people. And what I usually tell them is, you know, there's five of you, there's one of me. I'll probably am going to get messed up, but I guarantee you at least three of you are going to go to the hospital. Which one of you three is going to go to the hospital with me? And sometimes that's a psychological game, because what that does is that tells the boys, listen, this guy's ready to fight. And back then, that was how we dealt with things. And actually, sad part is back then, you could say, hey, I got an issue with you. Meet me in the parking lot or meet me at the local park this time. You fought hand to hand, no weapons, just you two. I mean, you two, but let's face it, the school showed up. But once that fight was over, it was done. Things aren't done that way now, unfortunately. People progress and it gets even worse and then more people get involved. But I always say, whenever it comes to bullying, is don't sit there and let it happen either. It's one thing to, not have it or avoid it. But if you see it going on and you do nothing, you're just part of the problem, not helping it at all. I think people who bully other people are cowards, all honesty. I don't have a lot of room for bullies in my life. I don't think there's anything endearing about bullies. Because basically their egos get so big that they think they're better than someone else. That goes against the FRL model, which is a very humble life. And that's breaking a lot of the things. Now, when I talked about what the FRL was, love, care, compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. Clearly, if you're a bully, you don't respect any of those things. None of those things are part of your vocabulary. So this would be a case where, yeah, the FRL would get involved here. And that would be something you should see when an FRL get involved in some manner. I think there's safer ways to do it now than there was back then. So there's that. But I don't think bullying should be ignored. I don't think it should be going on. I think people need to have a voice. I think people need to be standing up for the people who are getting bullied. I think bullies should just, look in the mirror. And here's something I can tell you. What always makes me feel better about, the whole bullying scenario is if you look at the demographic of the bullies versus the kids who are getting picked on, 8 out of 10 times, the kids who, are getting picked on, if they can survive that bullying thing, if they have someone who is there to help them out or whatever, those are the kids who are going to go on to do something successful in life, whether it be, have a really good job, getting into a good school, and things like that. Usually it's the bullies who hate on those kinds of people because they have those opportunities. Now, those opportunities they have are because they've earned those. The bullies see it as, them being goody-goodies or being brown nosers or whatever the case may be. There's nothing wrong with doing the right thing and getting rewarded for it. And it's the same thing goes with if you're doing a good job at work, you should be commended for it, not, spit at for doing a good job. And bullies like to take away what other people have. That's kind of the whole milk money situation, right? They don't have the milk money. So they take yours. What they don't take into account is years later, they're still going to be stealing milk money or more things in life. Well, you own the store that's going to sell them the milk down the road. You get it? So that's kind of the scenario I look at when it comes to that. So that's my views on bullies. I worked with several different people. I talked to a lot of people about the anti-bullying movement. I've gone to schools talking about, what bullying is, how to combat the bullies in a safe way compared to what I did originally. Back then, again, I would have no problem getting physical if I had to be. And today, I probably still would get physical if I thought it was going to be necessary to protect someone else. So there's that. So to answer that question, yeah, bullying shouldn't exist anywhere, not in person, not at school, not at work, not at home, not online. I think everyone tells you that a lot. I think it's something that everyone is repeated over and over again. Here's the sad part. No matter how many times people say it, people are still doing it. That's what's really crazy. That's really sad also that despite how many people talk about it, how many people still do it and think that like it's okay. So that was my response to several questions I've gotten about my points on bullying. This one actually I really like. Someone asked me about my filmmaking career, how I broke into filmmaking, what I liked about filmmaking and how to get into the filmmaking business and various things. So let me bring you to the filmmaking thing. So as you guys all know, one of my first passions before, you know, all of that was I wanted to be a pro wrestler. And pro wrestling to me was my first priority was as far as goals go. Of course, you know, I was doing the grades in school because, again, I talked about that the last time. People doubted that I would not even – I was told I wasn't going to be finishing middle school or high school by my family, my blood. So immediately I crossed them out of my mind and did the exact opposite of what they said I was going to do. I actually did what I could to prove them wrong, which I did. Not only did I graduated high school with honors – 14th in class, to be exact. I wasn't the top. I was 14th in class out of 1,000 kids. So that's not too bad. And I got to speak at the school assembly that day, too, because of the fact of the papers I wrote. Because a lot of the times in school, I would write a lot of different book reports. My, you know, even predating the wrestling thing, I've always been huge into writing and creating and using creativity. I came from a very dysfunctional, destructive, despicable family. They're selfish. They're demeaning. They're out for themselves. They're demoralizing. They're humiliating. They're just not people you would ever want to be around, most of them, the majority of them, okay? They're all cutthroats. That's not what I'm about. I'm F4L. That's why I created the F4L. We'll go into that towards the end because that's going to take the most time to go into. I'm going to try to keep it short. But because that was a question I got too, and I'm going to go into that as well. But anywho, as far as the filmmaking thing goes, a lot of the creativity stuff comes back from predates a lot of the, you know, everything else. I mean, my aunt, I had one aunt that was actually also big into writing. Of course, she was also seen as kind of an outcast like I am. I would write short stories I've been writing a short story since probably second grade. I was writing short stories. Of course, back then, you know, I was a young kid back then. And I was writing song lyrics in first grade. So I was already writing things and doing the creativity thing. And I've always been, you know, fascinated with film and television and movies. And like wrestling, I don't just watch something. I can't, and to this day I do this. I can't just watch a television show, watch a movie, listen to a song. In my head, I have to, you know, pull it apart and look at it and analyze it and see where they're going and all that. That's how I do everything. I'm very anal when it comes to paying attention to detail. And then I like kind of scenario what I would have done this, that, or the other thing and how that was done. That's how I knew that I was going to be different, kind of like in wrestling. I did the same thing. I looked at all the things that were going on in pro wrestling. What would I do in that ring to get that reaction out of that crowd? How would I get that character over? And that's kind of how I am, and that's probably why I was pretty successful at being able to reach the audience and being able to have the command I have and to have the career I've had. And then when it came to filmmaking, in 2003 was the prime of my wrestling career, but it was also the downfall of it. 2003, I was in a wrestling magazine. I was given the Golden Microphone Award because of my promo skills. Promo is talking in front of the audience. So if you ever hear a wrestler on TV or, you know, saying something, that's a promo, right? Or, you know, doing something like that's a promo. And I was really good at those. So in 2003, I got a Golden Microphone Award for that role, for that part of the aspect. But I was also really high on doing things in the wrestling business. I was already a multiple-time tag team champion, a TV champion. I've already worked from pretty decent program, different companies already. I worked for some of the most talented people who I'm still friends with today. A lot of them are still wrestling actually in the ring, and I am proud of all of them. I feel bad that some of them are still working in some places where I don't agree with, but I am proud and happy for my brothers in the locker room for doing big things. But anyway, in 2003, not at the height of all that, you know, I just got big contracts, just got signed to another contract with a new company. I got injured. And in wrestling, it's like, well, what do you do now? You can't wrestle in the ring. I had a knee injury. you need a leg to wrestle, for me anyway. And I was always a gym rat since like middle school. I was always in the gym pumping irons and stuff. I was already in great shape. And then I got injured in 2003 with a knee injury. I was told by the doctor I wasn't allowed to do a lot of heavy, different work, and I had to stay away from the gym for a little while. And, you know, that happened. And so I said, now what do I do? In high school, I was given several different scholarships and whatever to go to college, and I wanted to go to wrestling school. So I was already in wrestling school when, you know, high school graduation came around. So I actually was able to find that a couple of my, you know, a couple of the schools, the scholarships were still in act, was still active. So in 2003, I decided, you know what, since I'm injured and I can't wrestle, I might as well go to regular school. Then the complication came in because I'm indecisive. Do I want to help go to school to learn how to help people and get a sociology degree or a human services degree, or do I want to go to film school and get a film degree? So rather than me, you know, beat myself up and, you know, try to decide the two, I did more work and took the harder route and got two separate degrees, and which meant more classes, more homework, more research. But at the end of it, upon completion, I walked away with two separate college degrees because of that. One in film production, the other in human services, which is why I have both now. Now, meanwhile, all of the other stuff you've already heard that I was doing, so I've already been there. Now, as far as filmmaking goes, a lot of people have been asking me, how do you break into it, and what's the best way to do it, and what do I look for in talent, and, you know, what's, you know, what is that? Well, here's the first thing I can tell you. Filmmaking is not for everyone. And I also say the film industry is not for everyone. And I also have to say, you know, you learn things in life as you go on, including this scenario here. So in the filmmaking business, you would hope, like in life, that everyone would have your back, everyone would be professional, people you work with were going to be, you know, spot on and be, you know, accurate with you. Unfortunately, in the filmmaking business, that's probably one of the biggest shark tanks, if you would, for people who like to leech on other people's work, steal other people's work, take, you know, credit for other people's work, whatever the case may be. I myself am a victim of this. I've had people who I've taken under my wing. I even went so far into writing the person a letter to get into film school, had him work on one of my films, and made him kind of like my secondhand man just to have him lie to me, told me he was moving, didn't move. And then, you know, because I had other things going on, I was taking time away from social media to focus on my family. They were able to manipulate things and kind of hijack my movie, and they tried stealing my movie for themselves. I don't know what they told the rest of the cast, because I casted the whole the people in the movie and whatnot and everything else. And I was always on set to do everything else, because that's kind of what I'm about, you know. Well, needless to say, you know, it didn't work well. So tried stealing from the movie. Fast forward, you know, I come to find out that this kid did in fact do that. He actually used some of the movie towards his film school. You know, unfortunately, when I went to film school, I actually went to all the classes, and there was I guess this guy missed the the legal courses you have to take when it comes to, you know, copyright laws and things like that, because although he could try to take a lot of that, because I had written the work, the characters, and all the other things, the person ended up, you know, getting a stern talking to and is not so well respected now in the filmmaking business because of that. Me, on the other hand, a lot of people on set with me who have ever been on set on one of my films are always grateful, and I'm always grateful for them. I actually told a story today. Someone asked me what it's like to be in a film movie, what it's like. Me, when it comes to one of my projects, I'm very hands-on in my projects. I do all the casting. Number one, if I wrote it especially, I have a few film projects right now that I'm working with. Some of them are a lot higher than others. And I'm also writing my very first musical stage play, which is something I've not written yet. I've been writing it. I haven't done one of these before. That's going to be an interesting when that comes down to pike. But I've actually been working in the film business, writing and creative and stuff for many years. So I've got a lot of practice. But here's what I can tell you about, you know, making a film and stuff like that. A little tip to the people who are making films. One, I always like my sets to be kind of like a family atmosphere. So instead of treating people like, you know, workers or just another piece of meat on the set or whatever, I like to actually meet everyone who's working on my project. And also I take that time to talk to them to make sure they understand what the project is we're making, to make sure they can see what the scenario is we're filming, answer any questions they have, because I wrote it if they're in my film and I casted them. And the other thing I think people should do more of is something I do, is when you go to these casting calls, and I've hosted a lot of casting calls for a lot of my films, and you know, the first time as a filmmaker, you're kind of nervous until you realize that these people are coming for your film. It goes from having these nerves, like, oh my goodness, you know, how is this going to go, to the sense of pride, respect, and admiration you have for the people coming down to audition for your film. Because if they have sent you a headshot and they sent you a resume, that means they want to be part of your project. To me, I think that speaks volumes over everything else. So what I do is when I do a casting call, I do a lot of things. One, I talk to the people in depth about themselves. I get a feel for how they are. Are they on time? Are they late? You know, if they're a younger person, how is the family dynamic? Because I can tell you how, as a filmmaker, I can tell you that dealing with stage parents can be kind of a nightmare. I've been fortunate enough that not a lot of the people I've dealt with have been nightmares, but there are some out there. There's, you know, books, stories, movies about what it's like to grow up as a child actor. There's also laws and stuff that protect a lot of them, but a lot of people, you know, should pay attention to. But one of the biggest things you can have on a set for me is having that relaxing feeling on the set, because for two reasons. One, if everyone on set is comfortable with each other and as a whole, you don't have as much, there's no competition. See, in the filmmaking business, there's a lot of cutthroat people in there. See, actors go to a role because they all want that big starring role, right? So everyone wants to be Anakin Skywalker, but only one person could be Anakin Skywalker. Now, the difference between me and George Lucas, when I'm cast or whoever, instead of me looking at just Anakin Skywalker, I see a young man or a young woman who is coming in to audition for that. But, well, maybe Anakin's not right for you, but what about this? I've actually written in scenes because I believed in the acting talents of people who've come down to audition for my film, because I have respect for the people who give up time out of their day to come be part of my project. Even if I can't offer them that role, particularly they were coming down to give them because there might be someone who I think would fit that better, either whether it be scheduling or whether it be just dynamics, I will find a role for them in my film. I've done that several times. So that is something I have a lot of pride in. And I also take a lot of pride in the fact that I know that a lot of people who have worked with us, with me on a film, have gone on to brag about working on our films, have had nothing but nice things to say what it's like to be on my set. But to me, to watch these talented people go on to bigger things, I feel proud. Because I know that I was someone who took a chance on them back in the day to get them on their path to that role. Even if I'm not part of that particular project that they're doing now that made them, you know, a big star, I'm proud of the fact that they put the work in, that at one point I took that chance, got them their bug, they felt comfortable enough to try it again until they got this big role. That, to me, is endearing to me. But to watch your project as a filmmaker on a screen with the people who helped you work your film. That is a magic to me that you can't explain. It's kind of like being in front of a wrestling ring, in front of a wrestling crowd. You can't explain it unless you've done it. But it takes work. There's a lot of pros and cons. Not every movie you're going to make is going to be a big hit. Sometimes you got to take the pros and the goods. Some, you know, roles are going to be better and whatever else. I think it's also important to keep contact with everybody. A lot of people in the movie making business, it's kind of like summer camp. You know, everyone says goodbye for the summer. At the, you know, you're good friends with everyone during the camp, course of a summer camp. But then when school goes back in the fall, you never see each other again. Or same thing goes with school. You're friends with people in school. Once the school day is over, you never see them until the following school year. We all have those dynamics. I don't think it should be like that. I think you should always keep in contact with those people who mean something. So to this day, I still reach out to a lot of the actors and the actresses and the people who worked on my films. I'm proud of them, and I'm happy for them all. And, you know, I think they're doing big things. I'm proud of every one of them. So that's the filmmaking thing. Hope I answered questions regarding that. And as far as casting goes, usually what I'll do is I'll cast a role to a person. I'll cast usually the role to a person versus a person to a role. That's kind of hard to explain. Basically, I kind of know what a character is, but when I see the person, that's where the character comes from. That's kind of how I cast. It's a little different than a lot of other people. But that's me. Someone asked me about respect. So someone asked me about respect in the sense, you know, do you think respect is given and not earned? Oh, my, you know, what is to respect someone? And for me, I think respect is something you earn, not necessarily should just be given like a prize. To respect someone is, I mean, for me personally, I am F4L, so I do that anyway. But on the same sense, I think when it comes to really respecting someone, you really have to earn that respect. I don't think you should just give it to them just because either they're a relative or they're a teacher or because they have some type of title attached to them. I think they have to earn that as far as respect goes. I know the same thing goes for you. You can lose respect, and I think that's okay too. I think people should be held accountable for their actions. And if someone does something disrespectful to you, then it's a mutual thing. People ask me if I'm watching pro wrestling. I'm not. My wife watches pro wrestling a lot, and someone watched our thing. My son listened to the show. My son and my wife and I did. I can tell you that my wife, son, and I have done that experiment. We put all of those people. See, for those who don't know, go back to a show we did a little while ago, where my son, my wife, and I, we drafted our own WWE rosters. Right. They have three brands. They have the NXT brand, which is their kind of like their developmental. Then they have Raw and SmackDown. Basically, what we did is we took their talent pool and drafted them to our roster. But then my son and I remembered that we have the Dream Master kind of our show we do on YouTube. We have that technology. We can actually see what it's like to actually take those three shows and do that. So that's what we kind of did as an experiment. In a later show, I'm going to talk about that in depth, about the YouTube stuff, bring everyone up to guard. But I wanted to also announce again that on the 14th, my son and I will be debuting our brand new show on YouTube called Us Versus Them, where we're going to take our best cause, our best created wrestlers, our best people who put us where we are, and put them against the best of pro wrestling ever. And me and my son have been working really hard on that project, and maybe later on, I'll have, not tonight, obviously, but later on I'll bring him on. We can talk about it, give you his little preview. And then, again, it will be on it will be on YouTube live on the 14th on my regular YouTube channel at Jazz and His Icons of Wrestling. It is not associated with it, but there are people who are from that show who will be featured because they've done such a great job that they're going to be representing us against the best of pro wrestling. So a lot of them probably know who they are, so a lot of them are going to be representing us there, and, you know, we're happy to have them and proud to have them on our roster. So there's that. I want to do a couple F4L shout-outs. First of all, I do want to shout So those of you guys who watched my Instagram or saw my Instagram page prior to me coming on, you saw the coffee I made. So the convention I went to not long ago where I got to, you know, talk to a lot of various filmmaking celebrities and stuff, there was a vendor there who was selling this amazing coffee that has, like, they're gimmicked to have, like, horror-themed or different various pop culture-themed coffee. The name of the company that does the coffee is called, one second, they call it Dead Sled. That's D-E-A-D-S-L-E-D. They are amazing coffees. They have an amazing assortment of flavors. Most of them are, you know, custom to some type of pattern of a person. The ones I featured are the ones that I combined to make this coffee I had tonight. Usually when you make coffee, it's one at a time in here because I like to make everything stretch. But tonight I wanted to try something different. So I took the Robert England brand, I took the Kane Hodder brand and the Bill Moseley brand of each and actually combined them and brew this one pot. So I got to tell you, it's amazing coffee. These three together are amazing. Sometimes in the morning when I really want to get going and I can't decide Freddie or Jason, combine them both. That's what I've come to learn. It's a little bit of half and half there. Bill Moseley, I'll drink on a regular basis. I can drink that by itself. I don't have to add anything to that. I can drink them by themselves as well, but, you know, what's the fun in that? But tonight I want to do something differently. But I do want to shout out Dead Sled. I'm not endorsed by them or anything, but they do a great job, great coffee. Also, while I'm on that, my daughter and I are the only ones in our family who drink tea on a regular basis. My wife here and there. I do enjoy tea. It's probably the Irish in me. But my daughter also likes some tea. Actually, for her 20th birthday party, she wanted to have a tea party, which is what we had. But when I was at the same show, our friends that want to get their names right now, too, because I love that stuff as well. I think it's work together, actually. That would be great. I would have to compete against them, too. But give me a second, folks. I got to find the key. I believe they're called Brutality. That's, I'll tell you exactly what they're called in a second. So, as you can hear, they take me through, I think. So at the same convention I got the coffee, these people call it, and I was correct, it's called Brew Tea. It's called Brutal Teas. That's B-R-U. T-A-L-I-T-E-A-S, Brutally Teas. And again, they have like themed tea flavors. Now, for the record, this tea is not tea that you get in a bag like you go to like a supermarket. This is actual tea in a bag that you actually have to brew and whatever. And it is amazing tea. The one I made here is Banana Bell. Banana Bell is great. But they have all kinds of flavors. And for my daughter, for her, you know, she wasn't able to go to the convention. But, you know, since her birthday was not long before that, I brought her home one called Bohemian Raspberry or something like that. It's basically, you know, themed, you know, play on words of the Queen song. But it's a tea, and it was delightful, she said. So I'm very happy that they're there. So shout out to them. Because they keep my mind going and keep me occupied. And a lot of people think the coffee actually keeps people awake or whatever. To be honest with you, and this is a sad part, I've had so much coffee in my time, in my lifetime, I've been given it at a young age. Coffee doesn't have the effect on me like it does for everyone else. I can drink a pot of coffee and still go to bed, which most people would. I don't recommend that, by the way, people. Don't drink a pot of coffee by yourself. But I can, and I have done that in the past, and I can still go to bed, no problem. It's not the caffeine. It's about the feeling I get. It actually relaxes me. It focuses. It gives me focus. So that's kind of what coffee does for me versus everyone else. And it tastes so lovely. It's just a great flavor. Anyway, my wife is the foodie, not me. I don't drink alcohol, and I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't do alcohol. Probably the closest thing I have is coffee and tea. I guess if that's a vice, then that's probably my vice. But there are a lot worse things out there. My doctor has said that my heart is better than anyone's he's seen. And the same thing goes for everything else. My, you know, everything is, I'm actually in pretty decent shape for a person like me. All right. So there's that. Well, okay. They're not the only F4 I got a shout out. I also want to shout out a few other people. I want to give a shout out to, of course, Okay, Thank You, our friends Mike, Tristan, Robin. Apparently, they do have a new YouTube video out as of today. To be honest with you guys, I have, if you guys are listening, which I highly doubt, but if you are listening, I apologize. I didn't get to watch it yet, but I promise you I will. But yeah, so Okay, Thank You, our friends on YouTube, they do have a new video out. Go check them out. A couple other people I want to give shout outs to. Again, I don't know how many people are listening, but you know, at least I can say that I said it. Our two newest members to our roster, I want to give a shout out to Cosplay Jesus and Father Evil. They're people who go to a lot of these pop culture conventions dressed as what we call cosplayers in the convention world, and they do a great job at it. And they're very well known, and so much so that Father Evil is a good friend of my wife's, and Cosplay Jesus and Father Evil I saw at the same place that was not long ago, and they're tremendous guys, and they're on our roster on our YouTube show because of how awesome they are. So shout out to them. Hopefully they're having fun on the convention circuit and doing their thing. Again, JoJo the bodybuilder doing big things in the U.S. bodybuilding scene. Tony Fitness doing big things in the U.K. bodybuilding scene. I think on our YouTube show, you might see a crossover there somewhere. Spoiler alert. But things like that. Also wanted to point out, apparently Tony Fitness is having issues with people who are, you know, hitting him up, being inappropriate, whatever. And I can't emphasize it enough. And you know what? To be honest with you, he's not exaggerating, people. There are people who are absolute creeps on social media. And I'm telling you that because I have fought with a lot of those people who are creeps on social media. So don't creep on social media. There you go. I said it again. Tony, hang in there, and everyone else who's got to go through these, you know, people who've been inappropriate, don't know how to act like, you know, adults or act like behavior and be respectful of you. You don't need them as followers. Get rid of them and get people who actually want to see you succeed, like myself and, you know, the F-Worlds around the world. There you go. Don't put up with them and whatever else. So everyone else, be safe online, because you shouldn't be listening to people being disrespectful, listening to people who are saying disgusting, sick things to you, asking you to do things you shouldn't be doing. I don't think I should have to say that enough. Just be safe online. That's going to kind of umbrella that whole thing. To everyone else who on social media, on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, I'm not on Facebook again for the 9 billionth time, but I am on Instagram quite a bit. Twitter here and there, YouTube, of course, I'm always there. But, you know, again, if anyone is ever interested in coming on this show, you can feel free to email me here at our show at wowdreammatches, DREAMATCHES @gmail.com. You know, hit me up and say, hey, listen, I'd like to come on a guest on your podcast to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. I am all about people who are going out and making their dreams happen, and I don't care what the dream is, because I think it's awesome that there's so many people out there who are passionate like I once was, who knew what they wanted to do in life and actually put their work into doing those things. There's so many people who say, I want to do this, I want to do that, but just sit on their couch and don't do anything to get those done. The people who we have on our show who make up our roster are people who not only do they say, I want to do that, they actually bust their rear ends to get those things to happen. We've had JoJo the bodybuilder on this show not long ago. Tremendous young man, has tremendous drive. We heard from his dad and all that stuff even when he came on, that how much drive that kid has to become the next Mr. Olympia. Can he be Mr. Olympia? Absolutely, because he puts the work into doing it. Tony Fitness wants to be Mr. Olympia someday too. So someday down the road, they're going to meet eventually at Mr. Olympia. And I hope that happens, because they're two tremendously hardworking young men. There's a lot of hardworking young men and women on YouTube or on Instagram or whatever else who are doing big things. Riley Simmons, who is one of the best gymnasts from the UK, also a tremendous young man. There's a lot of, you know, the combat sports guys like the Stritzel Fight Club, tremendous drive, always working on themselves, always working out in the gym in their garage or working on grappling. I'll tell you, if I was still competing in combat sports, I'd be interested to see how they would do. I think they'd give me a run for my money, and I was pretty confident when I was doing combat sports. And the tremendous other athletes, the dancers out there, the entertainers, the movie people, the singing people. There's so many great, talented people out there in the world who should be, you know, celebrated and be proud of themselves. And I hope some of them come on this show so the world can hear from them and learn about what it's like to be them. And I think people can learn a lot from people who are willing to put the work into getting their dreams done. Sometimes you need to hear from someone who is doing whatever it is to get their goal done before you yourself can be inspired to put the Twinkie down, to get up off the couch and do whatever it is you want to do in life. I did that, and these people are doing that, and that's why anything can be done as long as you're willing to put the work into doing it. And that kind of sums all of that up. And those are powerful words, all honesty. Someone asked me, different, quotes I use. And I do have the same kind of quotes a lot, and a lot of them come from my grandmother. I think they're all recycled or refiltered or whatever, and I just, take them for whatever. I have a few different phrases and quotes that I hold on to, like real friends don't kick when you're down, they help you up. That was one I came up with way back in the day. That's my philosophy. And basically what it means is, when you're always, everyone thinks that they have the best friends out there, but to be a real friend is the ones who you can rely on no matter what. A real friend is going to help you up and not continue to keep you down. For example, a real friend, when you're struggling with some type of an issue, a real friend will be there to help you out of that situation. Maybe it's to talk to you. Maybe it's to encourage you. Or maybe you're doing something your friends don't think is safe, and your friends are doing that to help you stop doing the negative things. That's still a real friend because they're trying to help you up. That's awesome. When you have those connections, when you have the connections where you're willing to drop everything to be part of that, to help your friends out, that's a real friend. And that's kind of what it is. There's a lot of people who will hang around with you because of either what you do or what you do for them. And they're easy to manipulate off of you. People who just kind of are around the same scenario, just because they're in the same circle, they're not really your friends until they prove that they're your friends. And they're there to help you out. A real friend's not going to leave you hanging when the crap hits the fan. You know what I mean? That's kind of what a friend is. So there's that. I was going to do a TV film review. No, I can do a quick film review. I just watched Malignant just before I did this podcast. That was a mistake. I do write a lot of articles as far as film reviews and stuff like that. I really like James Wan as a director. I think he does tremendous work. This film was not my cup of tea. I didn't like this film. I did give it a chance. I kind of had an idea what the thing was by the name of it. And if you Google what it is and the definition, I'm like, what is this going to have to do with a horror movie? Yeah, James Wan, I love him as a director. This film, not my cup of tea. You guys doing? It's available on streaming service of HBO Max. You can go see it in the theater as well. And I think actually currently, I think it's Showcase Cinema, which is where my son works, by the way, now. Right now they're doing some type of special. If you order your tickets online to see Malignant, you'll get a $2 credit on your whatever the program is, the showcase offers. I don't know what it is, but you get a $2 credit if you order your tickets online to see it. I saw it today. I wasn't a fan, but I'm not going to discourage you from trying it out. And again, I really like James Wan. I really like his work with the Conjuring series, the Insidious series, both tremendous work there and the other things he's done. This one just, I wasn't a fan of this one. Everyone, again, everyone's entitled to make one, you know, bad movie, and then you just go on to the next one. And it shouldn't tarnish your reputation, and you shouldn't feel bad, and you shouldn't also feel like, oh, I'm a failure. You still made a film. It's still out there. You should feel pride in that at least. In the same sense, you take whatever the mistakes were from that, you learn it to apply it to the next project. That's how you do approach a movie project. And I think James Wan's going to go places in life, and he's doing some tremendous work anyway. He's entitled to one bad movie. Anywho, that's that. I already touched on the fact that I'm not watching pro wrestling currently, and I talked about what that was. So I'm not going to go into a lot of that stuff. Talked about that. So I'm going to try to give you guys, I have 37 minutes and 35 seconds to explain the story of the F4L. Do I have time? Let's give it a shot. Let's see how I can do this. I'm going to try to keep this as simple as possible. Look, here's the deal. Growing up, I grew up in a family where none of the things in the F4L existed. And I honestly believe that that's how a family should be. I think a family consists of love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences. And then as I grew older and as a young man, a young teenager, I decided that my blood family are not people who I want to associate with. They are not people who I put a lot of credit or I put a lot of investment in my time with because they're such negative people. They don't have any of these qualities, and I'm not going to be around these people. So when I would meet my other friends, or other brothers, I should say, or sisters, or whatever the case may be, I would tell them about what I wanted to, you know, I talked about the F4L. Of course, F4L wasn't a thing yet, didn't have a name yet. It was just the feeling. This is what a family should have. This is what a family dynamic is. And as I found out, and I got emancipated when I was 16 because I was done with my blood family, I left home. I left home actually when I was 15, but I got emancipated when I was 16. I was seen as a legal adult at 16. But what I did was when I was talking to other people, a lot of the foundations, you'll hear about it, was laid down in like when I was 13 or so. A lot of the stuff started then where I would spend more time with my friends and I would rely more about, you know, spending time and talking more investment time with my friends than with my blood. But by 16, 15, I was done with my blood altogether, and I would invest all my time into my friends. And as I found out, I was not the only one that had this kind of a dynamic. There are other people who I was meeting who also had this dynamic where their families just don't get them. They don't get their family. There were people who were often, you know, outcasted or people who that, which is strange, right? You would think someone who is positive for the most part with love, care, compassion, standing, respect for each other's difference, you would think someone like that you would want to be around. But here's the thing. That's good when you want that kind of a thing, but there's so many negative people in the world, like our blood, who don't get that. And one of the struggles we had then that we continue to have today is people who often don't understand what it is, the F4L is, what it is about, who call it into question, who will, you know, make their judgments on it. And a lot of it is just, again, I think it goes down to the fact that they don't understand it, so they automatically have to hate it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a kid, you don't think you're going to like something, so you say, I'm not going to like that, even though you've never tried it. But what happens when you do try it for the first time? Oh, that's actually not bad, right? Some people can't accept what the F4L is. People don't want to give that time for what the F4L is, so they don't think it's worth their, you know, worth it to invest time into it. So they hate on it. And we get that, you know. So when the F4L started, again, I'm credited for being the founder, and I'm really not. I am probably the one who brought everyone together because the original F4L was made up of four of us, who kind of laid down the foundation for what the F4L would be. And I'm grateful for those relationships, my brothers and my sister. And I can tell you that in the drop of a hat, any of them have always been there for me, and I was always there for them. And that's kind of what the F4L is. It's that family dynamic. Your brother needs something, so he calls you first before he calls anyone else. A brief story. My closest F4L was Adam. And in the F4L, we're given a name. That's your name. That's your family. That's your F4L name. So I'm Jazz because that's always my name anyway. Adam we called Ace. And Ace or Adam, either one. I'll call him Adam now. But anyway, back then he was like a year or two younger than me. But he was growing up like I did. He had a lot of energy like I did. He was very creative, but people would often judge him for being kind of a Looney Tune. Very funny and creative, comedic challenge. He liked to be comedic. I like to see people happy. He grew up kind of a similar dynamic where his mother and family didn't understand him. I grew up in a family where my family could have rat's ass about me. So we met each other at a program kind of a thing. Because again, I was living on my own, so was he now. And we came together and we were talking about our past. We kind of made this joke one time that we were long lost brothers. And that's where that kind of foundation of the family thing starts. And then as we're talking about, what it is to be a family, love and care and compassion. You should never be ashamed to tell someone or have a regret for telling someone how you feel about them. So in the F4L, we have no problem saying we love you and goodbye, I love you, take care. Because here's the thing. I always tell everyone who is in my F4L that I love them because you don't know when your last time you'll ever get to say that to them is. Because life is a precious thing, as we learned. It is now 9/11 as I look at the clock now, and today is the exact example of what that is, right? To live in the moment, to feel the appreciation of that love, the enduring love. And that's what you should learn from. And when we think about being the F4L, you should never be ashamed to tell someone, regardless how old, no matter how male, woman, or whatever, that you love them as a brother or a sister, because we do. So we told him, and then Pam was the next one to join, came on board. She was our sister, and we would stick together. We were always together, and we always hung out together. We always enjoyed each other's company. We'd talk about things. Pam would have a hard time. She'd come to us when she needed advice. We would go to each other if we needed advice. We'd go to her if we needed something. We kind of batted things off to each other. And we kind of came up with the creed, the love, the caring, compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. Because I wasn't as much of a daredevil. As much as Adam was. Adam was into doing a lot of daredevil type thing. He would do like BMX stuff and was into demolition derby stuff and all that stuff. That's cool. That's him. Me, I'm more in the creative side of things. I like to do creative type things. I like to write and whatever else. But the thing is because we're F4L, we're respected for each other's differences. A quick story about the dynamic of the F4L. There are two stories regarding, again, this also plays with what a real friend is and the power of what the F4L is. When I was 13, a very close friend of mine, an F4L brother of mine, before the F4L was a thing, because technically the F4L didn't have a name yet until 1996, the F4L didn't have a label yet. But in 1993, I was already, as I said, hanging around a lot with my friends and relying on each other with them than I was with my own blood. So my friends at the time, I already told the story how my friends and I did this thing where we would go to parties to make sure everyone at these parties were safe. And, being safe, not doing anything too crazy or whatever. And a friend of mine was shot on Halloween night and bled to death in my arms because we didn't know CPR first aid or anything. We were 13. But since that day, I vowed never that I would never be in that situation where I wouldn't know how to help someone again. That's why I got certified in first aid and CPR at 15 a year later, or 14 or 15 as soon as I could. But regardless of that, that's kind of how that is, and that's kind of the dynamic. Now, fast forward to 2016, 17, the F4L is now a thing. We put a label on it. Basically, what the F4L is your friends, who are your real friends, the Fito dynamic, those are your brothers and your sisters. You're no longer friends, your brothers and sisters. You have fans, are the people who support your friends, who bring you guys together, who maybe they're too young to really fit into your crowd, but they want to be your friends someday. Those are your fans. And when you have your friends and your fans working together in one unit, you have the family dynamic. And in essence, you have the F4L. Get it? Friends, fans, family for life. Simplified for the F4L. So that being said, I'm at Adam's birthday party, and his stepfather had given him a shotgun for his birthday party, for one of his presents. Adam, again, is a sports kind of a person. He was a daredevil. And at the time, he was like, because, again, I'm a little older than he was, and he was turning 17, so I would have been like a year or two older. But I was at the birthday party because, you know, that's what you do. Gave him the shotgun his stepfather did for hunting, and his stepfather was a big deal in the hunting. But because Adam knew how I was, I don't like guns to this day because I saw what happened to my friend because of a gun. I believe in hand-to-hand combat at the end of thing. I don't like guns because of that reason. So anyone who is in a gun thing, that's your prerogative. That's your, you know, your thing. I don't like guns because I've seen what they do to people who have no belonging having it. So I don't like guns. Now, Adam, knowing this when he was 17, he opened this present and, you know, it was a shotgun, and I'm there and I'm looking at it. So, you know, again, I'm respectful of others', you know, decisions. And I would have, you know, if he wanted to have it, that's his thing. It's not my, you know, but he looked at me, he looked at his mother, his stepfather, the gun. He did this like three times and he said, so I can have this. I can do the responsible thing with this, and this is mine for no matter what. Yeah, that, you know that. In his stuff, I said, "Yep, that's your responsibility. You can do the most. You got to be responsible with that." So Adam, without even thinking, he took the shotgun, the case, and all that stuff, walked over to the trash can and threw it in the trash. And of course, you know, his stepfather and his mother looked at me and blamed me because they know I don't. And he even said why he did it. He's like, you, because they, of course they freaked out when he threw the shotgun that was worth quite a bit of money, I understand, in the trash. But he said, listen, you told me to do the responsible thing, and I just did it. You know what that gun, what guns did to his friend or brother at that point? We don't want nothing to do with it. So they returned the money or whatever, but that's that dynamic. Another dynamic is I was, you know, fast forward years later, Adam's older, and he's probably like maybe, I want to say he was 19. And at that point, I was in a bowling league, which I was in the league for years. And I was committed on a team. And when it comes to me in team sports, I'm always there on time. Actually, I'm always early. And I stay until it's over, and I give it my all. But when it comes to the F4L and my family, I drop everything for my family. I was at the bowling alley one night, and I got a phone call from the hospital that Adam had been in a motorcycle accident. And the woman who was on my team, who was, again, claimed to be a friend of mine, we went into detail before about them. She was like, you're not leaving now, are you? I'm like, yeah, absolutely I am. My friend is in a motorcycle accident. I'm going to make sure he's okay. At the time I didn't drive, another friend of mine was coming down to pick me up to bring me to the hospital. And because he asked for me to be there, I was there. Now, what I didn't know is because he was 19 or whatever, they called me before they even called his mother because, as it turns out, I was his emergency contact person. because of the fact that I was labeled as his brother. First one they called, and I called his mother to let her know. That's how that worked. You know, the good thing is he pulled through, he was okay, and he's, you know, I was there for him when he woke up, and that's what we do. But in a drop of the hat, when it came down to, you know, something I'm serious like bowling in my team, if my friend was in danger, my friend needed me, I'm there. That's what the F4L is. And Adam, anyone who's in the F4L, that's kind of how we are. And whenever you need something, we're there. We're the first ones you go to before you worry about anything. And usually everyone has struggles in life and everyone has hard times. But when you're F4L and you know you can, hey, listen, you can pick up the phone or whatever, no matter what time it is, you know what F4Ls you can talk to about certain things. You can just pick up the phone and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on. Another scenario, you know, I was moving one time and, you know, no one was willing to help me out at all. And next thing I know, I put a message out on social media. Hey, I'm trying to move a couch. Is there anybody willing to help out? And no one responded except for two of my Adam and D-Rock showed up to help me out. And that's kind of what happens with the F4L. And that's kind of what happens. You need something. The F4L is the first people out there. That's how you kind of know. So. And the same thing goes for me. I've had people who have asked for my help, and I help them out whenever I can, whether it be, you know, putting them over in some way or giving them a spot on the show to talk about whatever they're trying to do, whether it be giving them advice on how to get them to make the most of whatever their goal is. If I know how to do something and I know I can help someone with it, I'm going to help them, give them that knowledge so they can get better in doing that. Because I want to see people succeed. I want to see people be happy. I want to see people make their dreams come true. Anyone can. So, you know what? I think that might have been the quickest I've ever explained how the F4L came to be and gave you even the scenario what it is to be F4L, because that's kind of what it is. Your F4L, friends, fans, family, they're your family. Anyone who is F4L are your brothers and your sisters. There's no more any of the other stuff. So, and then you're all connected if you're F4L. So, in other words, I have brothers and sisters around the world who probably don't even know who I am, but they're, because they're F4L, they are my brothers and sisters. And again, they can reach out to me as long as I can understand them, and I'll talk to them. I've had one of my closest brothers in the F4L are in Wales, Sean and his brother Kieran. Fantastic young men, and I haven't talked to them in a little while. Life keeps us all busy. But Sean, a quick shout out to Sean Parfait and his brother Kieran. I hope they're both doing well. I know Sean got married and had a baby not long ago. Hopefully, parenthood has turned out to be as it is for me, and it's a blessing. I hope the family is doing well, and hope all of my F4Ls around the world doing awesome. Shout out to all of them. And that's kind of how I look at the F4L. When I say F4L, I'm talking about my family worldwide. And I'm not ashamed to tell people I love them, because we shouldn't be ashamed to tell someone we love them or we care about them. A lot of people, and I'm a man, and I'm the first to admit, I'm a man's man. I like, you know, some sports, and I'm very competitive and whatever else. But in the same sense, and I like women, granted, that's my thing, I like women, but I'm not hateful on people who, you know, indulge in other things or, you know, practice other lifestyles. That's their choice, and I don't hate on them for that. I respect them for that. To each their own, right? That's part of what the F4L is, accepting people for who they are. And when I say I'm a man's man, or when I say that as a man, a lot of people feel like you feel awkward telling your friends or your brothers you love them. You shouldn't be, because you should always tell whoever it is you care about them as much as you can, because there's going to be that time when you can't say it anymore. I lost my mother in 2019. She was killed in a hit and run down the Cape, made national headline news. I talked to my mother the morning before she died, I should say. And the last thing we both, you know, said to each other, we loved each other. I told her I loved her. She loved me. My mother was an avid smoker for a number of years, and that was one of my biggest annoyances with her. So much so that she wasn't even 50. She was like 41, I think. I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember how old she was when she died. But I can tell you that she was in a wheelchair before. She was 40 years old because of severe emphysema. She smoked cigarettes at a young age because it was a cool thing to do. My mother was on severe oxygen up until the day she died because she enjoyed smoking. No matter how much I wanted her to quit smoking, she continued to smoke because that was her thing. She already felt like she was already this far gone. No one's going to tell her otherwise. She's going to die happy, she'd say. But, I mean, I don't know how many times the doctor said, you know, your mother's not going to make it, but my mother would fight through. She had the heart of a warrior. She was a stubborn Irish woman, much like I'm a stubborn Irish man. No one's going to tell me what I'm going to do or how much time I have. So my mother pulled through time and time again. It was that night. She went out to get coffee and cigarettes at the gas station across the street, which is like a coffee shop, because she was a social butterfly and everyone was her friend. So she went out there to go get coffee and cigarettes, and a girl, you know, 19 years old, drinking, driving, whatever else, hit her, dragged her, left her in the road to die. Not to be graphic, but that's what happened to my mother. But the moral of that story is, you know, prior to that weekend, I had my housewarming at my new apartment that I just had. I was very proud of it. I was happy that my mother was there. A lot of people hadn't seen my mother in a long time. My mother was going to move up to be in my area. She was going to move closer to me because she was in an area that was pretty far away from the rest of the family. And this was going to be a positive thing. And one of the things I'm happy about, I'm not happy about that, is the fact that I know at least I gave my mother the chance. I actually fixed the relationship I have with my mother, and I gave my mother the chance to, you know, be in my life. Unfortunately, she didn't get to spend a lot of time with my wife, my kids, and so they never really got to meet. And it's really sad to me that she wasn't able to be at my wedding because she would have been there firsthand. When I go to these pop culture conventions, my mother would have been the first person in line to meet whoever it is. She was a person who hung on to life and lived life. And when I think about my life, I kind of think like her. She lived the moment, and she was going to fill every day as epic as possible. That's what my mother did. And that's what I continue to do. I fill my days as epic as possible. I fill it with everything I can. If there's something I can do that day, I'm going to do it. Me and Adam for years, we would just do things on the spur of the moment because we were just there. We went bungee jumping twice. We saw a sign one time. We were driving to the reptile place not too far away from where I was to look at snakes. And we saw a thing they were doing bungee jumping. He looked at me as he was riding. He goes, "Hey, you want to go bungee jumping? Look, they're bungee jumping." I said, "Okay, why not?" You know, and that's kind of how we were. He had a scuba license. I got a scuba license. I was already swimming. I was part of the swim team back prior anyway. So we both got our scuba license to swim, you know, deep sea dive and snorkel and here with the air tanks and stuff. We went shark diving twice just because we could. But the moral of that story is looking at things like my mother, she lived the moment to the fullest. I lived my mouth to the fullest. Because you only get one shot at life, and whatever you want to do in life, if you have the opportunity to do it, you've got to take that moment because you don't know when or if you'll ever have that opportunity again. Regret is a terrible thing. One of my biggest, saddest regrets is that the weekend of my housewarming party that my mother was there, she was smoking, and I was really very critical of her smoking because she was on oxygen. A week before that, we were told that she was going to be, you know, we were thinking, the doctor told us a week before that we were going to have to pull the plug on her because she was going to die. And then she pulled through again and again, and she continued to smoke. And I was like, "Mother, why are you doing this to us? Why do you continue to smoke and hurt us?" And then, whatever the case may be, but she ended up going home. But she knew, when I talked to her the next day after she had gone home, I said, listen, I'm sorry that I came down hard on you on the weekend, but, you know, it's because I love you. I want you to be around. I want you to be at my wedding someday or whatever. She understood that. She made sure that her things were lined up at the house. And the last thing we said to each other, we loved each other. And, you know, like all of us, that's how we left it. And that was the last conversation I'd have with my mother ever. And that's why you have to sell everyone what you feel when you can, because you might not have another opportunity. You don't know when that time is up. My mother didn't. I didn't. And unfortunately, I found out after the world found out about my mother, because I was at work after the whole day. So enjoy your lives, everybody. You really have this whole thing. The moral of really today should be celebrating your life, celebrating the ones who have gone before you, respecting the ones who have gone before you, taking a moment to remember them, and taking a moment to realize what you have now, what you're going to do in the future. Put away all of your differences. Put away all of your regrets. Put away all of your doubts for one day. Suspend it all. Today of all days should be the day that you should really be humble enough to appreciate life for what you have. If you're listening to this right now, take solace in the fact that you can listen to this right now. There are many people who are involved on that day that can't. They're not listening right now physically on the airwaves, but I'd like to say that in my heart of hearts, I think they're listening down upon the people who survived and their stories and what they did are going to live on. The spirit of man cannot be broken by an act of terrorism or by act of hate. The F4L has been tried time and time again. People have spit at people who are F4L. We've been called all kinds of names. People have tried to break the F4L spirit. They tried to break who we are as F4L, challenge our beliefs. They tried to break the fact that we want to show love, care, and compassion, and stand in respect for each other's differences. Guess what? They can't. Because we have that power, and we have the respect for ourselves to do so. It's a lot easier to be part of a society that just kind of the flavor of the month. It's a lot harder to stand up for what you believe in yourself. It's easy to sit on the side of the road to watch a burning house. It's a lot different than running in to see if everyone's okay. Literally, my mother ran into a house three times when we were kids. I wasn't home during a house fire we had. My mother went into the house three times to pull out each of my brothers and my sister. When my mother died, none of them respected her enough or remembered that up until she died. I do, and I did, and I still remember that. There's going to be another anniversary coming up in a little while. But something a little bit more personal for me, as far as terrorism goes, is you guys have probably heard of the Boston bombing at the marathon. I was a block away from when the bombs went off because I was working in that DAME program. We were there to bring water for the other runners, and we were a block away from the explosions. And the measure of man was decided on that day as well. Just like before. And just as I expected and just like anyone should, instead of running away like everyone else, I ran towards the bombing explosions to see how I could help. And I did. I was able to help with some first aid and some, you know, various things like that. It was a horrible scene, but I ran in to help everyone that I could. It was not a nice scene to see, but I've already seen plenty of things in my time that wasn't going to shake me because I was going to help people if I could, and that's what I did. Goes back to when I was 13, I didn't know what I was going to do to help my friend who died in my arms. I went and got first aid and CPR trained so years later, fast forward to the Boston bombing, I would know how to do a tourniquet to stop someone's arm from bleeding, to hold the pressure down to help someone else. The humanity is something that everyone should have. I'm not perfect by any means. I'm not a Superman. I don't consider myself a hero. I'm F4L. And anyone who tells me, what you did was really good, I said, no, that's what anyone should do. That would be the first thing someone should do, is be able to help someone. But then I realized I'm F4L, and that's kind of how we look at things. It's easy to be part of to hate on something, to be angry at something or someone. It's a lot harder to say, you know what, that's bad, but I'm going to do something about it. Our country, the United States, in the last several years, people have, fought each other over political things. Since 9/11, people have been fighting about, politicians and stuff like that. Listen, here's the deal. I'm not a political guy. I'm a United States citizen, but I'm also a citizen of humanity. I show everyone the same respect I show everyone, the United States and worldwide. But here's what I can tell you this. there's a couple songs that you can play that will bring you back to those days. And I listen to them once in a while because I remember, those feelings. I remember what it was like to live in those times, not just through 9/11, but the things I've witnessed after that, the Boston bombing and all that stuff. The term Boston Strong came because of how Boston recovered from the marathon. We didn't run and hide. We went after the persons, and we held the people responsible who did that day. We found them, we hunted them, we grabbed them and imprisoned them, or whatever the case may be. Justice was served to an extent. You can't take away the lives that were lost, no matter what good it was. Lives have gone that day because of the acts of these people. Whatever they want to credit their acts to, it's a gutless, cowardly thing. No matter what country they do it to, these things happen all over the world. In all honesty, it comes due to the fact that the F4 lifestyle isn't practiced everywhere. I know that sounds like I'm sensationalizing it and I'm making it sound like, what if, but the scenario is if people live the F4L way, that wouldn't be a thing that people could even get into. People fight over religion. People fight over political things. It's ridiculous. That needs to stop. Worship whoever you want. Be respectful of whoever you want to worship. I choose not to worship anyone. I worship my F4L because when it comes down to it, when the crap hits the fan, I know I can rely on my F4L to back me up, my family to back me up. So, this thing kind of circles itself, huh? We started out, talking about and remembering an event that's today, and we're coming to an end on the episode. We've, done a lot of things. It's kind of been kind of a serious episode. I gave some tips on the filmmaking business. It's not for everyone. Be ready for it. Be prepared. Cutthroat. You can't trust everyone in it. Make sure you know what you want. I talked about the art of making your dreams come true. And I talked to you about respect. I answered some fan questions. I did some shout outs. Another shout out to everyone, all my F4L worldwide again. And I love you all. At the very least, know that I love you guys, and no matter what happens, as a leader of the F4L, and I am never ashamed to tell you guys that I love you guys and I respect you guys. And if that makes me weak, whatever. I've been called weak because I care about others before, but to me, it takes a lot stronger to go against the norm than be part of it. yeah, I did a film review of Malignant. I wasn't a fan, but make your own assumption. Go check it out. It's on Hulu. It's on HBO Max if you want to watch it there at your comfort of your home for those people who have it, or you can go to the theater and, you know, I get there is, you know, various different promotions you can get into. I do encourage you guys to continue going to theaters if you can. Keep the filmmaking business alive. You know, we went through a year of people not going anywhere, and people can start going out and doing things. And I think people should start to go out there and continue living their lives. And that kind of goes back to the whole 9/11 thing too. We weren't going to stop living our lives or stop doing what we do because, you know, we were afraid that other people were going to attack us. That's kind of the spirit we have, and that's how we should go forward. We go down fighting, and we live our lives to our fullest, and I think that's what we have to do in the long run. If you have a goal, go after it. Take your moments and do it. Don't listen to excuses. Don't listen to haters. People will do that all day. That's because they don't have the drive that you do. The only person who can tell you can't do something is yourself. The only person that can make sure that you can do whatever it is yourself, and the person who should have your back no matter what, and the only person in your long run who should listen to is yourself when it comes to going after something you want to do. Be respectful. Live the F-World way, everyone. Again, if you guys ever need anything on here, reach out for your email, WowDreamMatches, WowDreamMatches at gmail.com. You can find me on my social media platforms. That's always out there. You can go on to on Instagram. My Instagram is F4LSEANJAZZSTW. That's on Instagram. That's the F4L Sean Jazz Stevens. You can also find me on Twitter at Sean SEAN Jazz JAZZ Stevens STEVENS on Twitter and on YouTube. We already know that the F4L icon, Jazz is icons of the F4L on YouTube. May all your dreams come true, everyone. I hope you guys are doing well. I'll be back with another edition on Tuesday, hopefully, maybe before that. To be a guest on the show, you can call in here as a guest at 516-453-9380. Again, to everyone worldwide, I love you guys. To the F4L around the world, I love you guys. To my wife and my kids, I love you guys. And to everyone worldwide, may all your dreams come true. I am the leader of the F4L, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, saying, may all your dreams come true. Peace and good night. Keep safe, everyone.